Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
USDA raised the soybean carryout by 90 million bushels and pushed the crop size above 3 billion bushels, and the beans rallied for the week. Well, that's just odd. We'll explore why on this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Welcome. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Greg Thessen of the National Agricultural Statistics Service about the reasons USDA raised the bean numbers. Our panelists today in studio are Brian Maple of FC Stone out of Indianapolis, Indiana, Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Gentlemen, let's open the discussion with this question. How is it that our analyst last week could be neutral to bearish the bean market, and yet it managed to rally in the face of a 3 billion bushel supply released by USDA this week? Steve Schilling, we'll start with you.
Well, good afternoon, and that's a very good question. I think the numbers were probably already in the market. I don't think anything came out as a real huge surprise. Maybe the carryout was a little larger than anticipated. If you look just right at the numbers, it is hard to explain why we rallied towards the close yesterday and then had a big rally again today. But I think seasonalities play a part. Part of the South American problem is still the unknown, and everybody kind of remembers how we got so bearish last year, and all of a sudden the index funds came in and we had a major rally. And the other thing is farmers just aren't selling anything at this point in time.
And Chuck Shelby?
We look at China. China came in and bought some beans. The president's going over there on Sunday, the first part of this week, and trying to get that trade balance back in favor of the United States. So if they change the Chinese currency, that'll allow them to buy more beans. So we think that's a major factor that's out there.
And we'll round out our first question with Brian Maple.
And I'll kind of back up what both of them have said. I think that there wasn't any real major surprise in this report. And you got to keep in mind we saw a 460 million bushel carryout a year ago today is what they were projecting. That ended up coming down to 256. And on top of that, today's action was mostly cash-driven with the CIF market up 3 to 5 cents a bushel, farmers not moving anything, and talk that China may have bought up to as much as 8 to 10 cargoes of beans.
Now, USDA has released the November crop report production numbers, as we heard. Corn production was up 2%, soybean production up 3% from the October estimates. USDA raised the national corn yield about one bushel to the acre. It now stands at 148.4. Total production raised this month as well, up 175 million bushels to 11.032 billion bushels. The new ending stocks figure was not up that same amount. Usage was increased, and the corn ending stocks raised 99 million bushels to 2.319 million. The soybean ending stocks took a much larger hit overall. It now stands at 350 million bushels. That's 90 million more than last month. And total production there was 76 million bushels higher than the November estimate. It stands at 3.043 billion bushels on an average national yield of 42.7 bushels the acre. USDA lowered the season's average cash price a nickel for both corn and soybeans. The new range for corn is $1.60 to $2, and for soybeans that range is $4.95 to $5.75. Let's stay with the beans. USDA lowered the exports by 30 million bushels. Given the current trends, is this the right assumption, Chuck?
Well, if China really does reevaluate their currency, I don't think so. I think probably they're maybe looking down the road at bird flu as a possibility. That's a big talk in the market. Do we really get bird flu, or does it just kind of pass by and we get that export business from China?
Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they finished in the bean pit for the week. The Novembers had a high this week of $5.94. The low was at $5.68.5. They settled at $5.93. We're up 12.5 cents from last week. July contract at $6.17.5 finished 6.5 cents higher in the bean pit. Steve, as you take a look at these numbers, what does it tell you about the cash market going into the next week and a half?
Well, obviously there's some lack of farmer movement. Like Brian mentioned earlier, there is This was cash-driven today. The SIF basis continually gets better. As long as farmers keep their hands folded and sit on these beans at these levels, and we're not real sure what it's going to take to trigger them to start selling, there's no reason why this thing won't continually go a little bit higher.
Last week, our panel told us if beans made $6.25 in the January, that maybe they ought to start marketing. Would you agree with that, Brian?
Well, wholeheartedly. I'm not so sure that you don't start before you get there. Because I'm going to say that the demand side looks like they were reasonable in trying to pull that demand back with the Chinese purchases currently running roughly 27% behind where they were a year ago. We need to be right on top of exports this time of the year, right on through into January. I mean, we found this week that Argentina is selling beans to China for the January shipment. So I think you just continue to reward the market when it gives you a nice rally. You step in and sell some. So if we're up much on Monday, I'll probably be selling a little bit more again.
And would everybody else agree with that? Are you making sales into a rally at this point? We'll start, Chuck, with you.
Yes, we would. And the other thing we look at, too, Todd, would be the 06 sales that we're getting the back-end beans to 620 today. We had another 10, 15, 20 cents. Not a bad place to look at 06 sales also.
And Steve?
Totally agree. I think we would even move that 625 on Jan down maybe 615, something like that, if we can target that next week. And as we approach $6 for beans out of the field, the 06, we would definitely be a big seller there also.
It sounds to me that everybody is in the neutral to bearish camp. Anybody not in that camp at this point? Seeing none, we'll move on. How far down do you think the market has the potential to go? And Brian, we'll go with you.
Well, I think that we're going to probably be slow to do much on the downside until we get confirmation of what kind of crop we've got down in South America. The USDA lowered the Brazilian acreage by roughly 6%, taking that crop size down to 58.5. And I think there's a large concern about how much fertilizer they put on. But I think you very quickly, after we can get some beans moving here with a little bit of a cash seasonal rally, we probably start turning our attention to South America as to what kind of crop they have. Everybody's got fresh in their memory how last year the crop continued to dwindle down there, and we saw this thing take off to the upside. So if we have a good crop down there, I think you could take beans right back down towards Lone Ranger.
You mentioned larger carryouts in previous years. Do you think that the number that we're working with now is a burdensome number?
I would say 350, if we have a decent amount of commodity from South America, yes, will be a somewhat burdensome number, and the psychology is totally different when we're thinking about an increased planting for next year, which could add more to that burden.
And Chuck, as you do the analysis there at risk management, which numbers did you focus primarily on the day of the release, and then did you change over time over the last couple of days?
Well, certainly that 350 carryover was bigger than we anticipated. I think we have to wonder, though, in the last few years we've seen beans have a pretty significant rally, and we just wonder, you know, how quickly farmers are going to be willing to let go of this crop, Todd, especially they just got done with harvesting. The last few years they've seen a significant bean rally. I don't know if we're going to get high enough here to get guys to let a lot go this fast.
Taking a look at the grains now, December wheat for the week had a high of $3.17.5, a low at 308.75. The settlement price there at 311.5, up a quarter from last week. July futures at 345.25 were up a quarter as well. December corn, $1.96.25, the high for the week. The low, a new contract low at $1.93.25. Settlement price at $1.95.5. They were unchanged from last week. In July corn at 224, down one. If I don't, if I've got this right, this is the third week in a row that a new contract low has been made in the corn pit. What do you make of that, Steve?
Well, there's just a burdensome supply out there. But I think one thing you look at now is the USDA report has come and gone. This is a time period that typically is really, really slow. A lot of people call it the holiday trade. We're going to have something in corn to spur, get us out of this trading range. We don't see a lot of downside pressure from here. Last year, the low was $1.91 on the D's. But on the other hand, we don't see a lot of upside until something comes along to spur people on to make them want to own this stuff.
Chuck, the corn usage was raised this month. I believe it now stands at a record 10.835 billion bushels. That's up from the 10.76 USDA issued in October. Where'd the new usage come from?
Basically, the ethanol industry. I mean, certainly with the high fuel prices and the energy bill going on there, I think more and more ethanol plants are coming online. I think they're pushing that right through there with ethanol plants.
The increase was 75 million bushels in ethanol production for the coming year. Was that enough?
Well, it just takes time to build these plants, Todd. You can only get them built so fast. So I think each year is going to grow, but I'm going to guess that they're probably have a pretty good handle on how many plants are going to come online.
Brian, how close are we to having a harvest low, not in the cash market, because I believe most believe that was put on the 18th of October, but into the futures market? Are we done?
Oh, I don't know that we're done. I think most of us probably are in the camp that we probably make a run at 191, but we don't go substantially below that. I think that the problem we've got and the farmers need to work with is the carry that's out here. We've got tremendous carry. This week we traded December corn out to 51.5 cents carry. You're running 30-plus cents at one point, Dece July carry, and I think the farmer needs to take advantage of that carry, because the only way you get the carry is by selling the carry.
And so lay out a strategy for me that would do that.
I think that any rallies that we find out here, if you've got farm storage on farm that you're wanting to try and move at some point, turn around and sell the July corn. Maybe on an HTA, or actually sell the basis level, depending on what they're willing to do, but lock that carry down and then turn around. And if you want to play for some rally, take some of the cheap calls, because volatility is extremely light right now, and you can buy calls at a relatively cheap number.
You said you were looking out for November beans and making some sales for next year. Are you doing the same for corn for next year's crop?
I'm not at this point. I think I'd like to see corn get upwards somewhere around 255 on the Dece before I get too excited about trying to sell that. With the talk about the acreage shifts, I think that you've got a lot of potential that corn could actually begin to build further carry in the July Dece and continue to expand that December to a little bit higher price level.
Steve, discussions in your office about acreage shift. John Bondurant told us last week he thought it could be as many as 5 million acres of corn that weren't produced next year.
Well, that's a really difficult number. As you drive around central Illinois, I can tell you right now there's an awful, awful lot of anhydrous that is going on and has already been put on. A lot of the guys that have maxed out all they can get and even trying to book this as cheap as they possibly can. So there's going to be a shift, probably in the marginal ground. You'll see more of a shift. I think the big cash rent operations probably will not shift. I think you'll see them on continuous corn. But as far as putting a number on it, 5 million sounds like an awful lot at this point in time. But we do look for a shift in corn and bean acres this year.
Chuck, total production 11 billion. 0.32. Was that an adequate number in your mind?
I think so. I think, you know, we had extra acres there this year. That really pushed up the number. Still pretty amazing with the dry weather we had. We're capable of producing a yield like that. So it's a nice big number, and nice to see that the usage is up there, too, to get rid of a lot of it. Without that usage, we'd be in trouble.
Anything out of the world agricultural and supply and demand estimates that caught your eye?
Nothing too surprising. We did kind of lower the beans a little bit out there. World supplies of coarse grains are still relatively tight, but we continue to grow these big corn crops. It kind of neutralizes that for the moment.
And what are you suspecting will happen in the wheat futures next week, Brian?
Wheat futures are continuing to struggle. They're going to be led by the other grains. What the corn and beans do is really what's going to determine what the wheat does. There's a lot of talk that the Australian crop could be as big as 26 million metric tons, and I think the USDA put them at 22.5. You look at the big export sales we had this week, and 800 of that was due to Iraq, which was already in the market. I think wheat's going to struggle.
And then if each of you would lay out a strategy, and I know, Brian, you've done part of this already, but if we could start with Chuck, and each of you could lay out a strategy for me for corn that is not priced yet, and potentially hasn't, the LDP hasn't taken. Chuck, we'll start with you and move across.
Okay, I think, Todd, you really have to seriously consider you took a nice big LDP, and as Brian stated, you got to go out there and get that carry, because otherwise you're just sitting there exposed, and I don't think you can afford to sit there and wait and see what happens. You better take that on a paper position. So we would, if you took LDP and got bins, you sell the carry, and then you look if you want to buy it back for some type of position there.
And Steve?
Well, they pretty much were all on the same page on this. Obviously, the market's telling them to do exactly what Chuck and Brian have said. And we've been recommending all along to get all the LDPs right up front here, because one of these days we'll probably wake up and lose a dime on it real quick.
Brian, you think there's good reason to go the other way if everybody's in agreement on this one?
Meaning to hang on and not sell?
Yeah.
I just struggle when you're looking at 2.3 billion bushels of corn, what it's going to take to really drive a significant rally. I'm not sure I see a lot of downside because the funds don't seem to have the appetite to build an extreme short position, but I don't see them building an extreme long position either, and I think you would have to have something like that to try and drive this up, so I don't see a reason to take the other side of that in corn.
One other number from the grains, the oats, 167 and three quarters on a settlement price in the December contract, and that was unchanged from last week. Taking a look at the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, December live cattle at a high this past week of $93.10. They're low at $90.27.5, settlement price at $90.42.5. They were down 105, and the feeder cattle at $115.05 were down 102.5. The only thing that was really notable out of that market for the week, I think, was the idea that came from Washington that they're looking to open up the Canadian border to the import of Canadian beef 30 months and older. Is this a good idea, and what kind of impact might it have on the marketplace, Brian?
Well, it's certainly going to have a negative impact on U.S. beef, but they didn't seem to read much into it. To be honest with you, we set new contract highs in December cattle this week, but I would think if we open that border, we're going to see this cattle market start to put a top in up here, which maybe it did here a couple of days ago because we had a couple of bad days to finish the week off.
December lean hog settled the week at 63.42.5. They were up 115 with a high of 64.55. They're low at 62.30. And the February bellies, $88.25, were off 55. When we return, we'll talk with Greg Thessen of USDA NASS.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Mild weather persisted over Illinois and the Midwest this week. Temperatures continued to average well above normal for this time of year. High temperatures the first half of the week reached into the 70s before a cold front knocked temperatures back to a more seasonable range beginning Wednesday afternoon. At this time in November, normal high temperatures range from the mid to upper 40s in northern Illinois to the mid-50s central and to the upper 50s across southern Illinois. The only rain in the past week is what came in last weekend's thunderstorms, but that rainfall was fairly substantial. Most areas in Illinois have had near normal precipitation at this point in November. The cold front on Wednesday, although initially holding promise for more rain, came through most of Illinois dry. It appears next week could be an active week in Illinois, with cold fronts swinging through the state Tuesday and then again on Friday. There will be brief warm-ups prior to each frontal passage, but in general it looks like temperatures will be near normal much of the week. The system late next week may bring in much colder weather for the weekend, however. Both systems should be accompanied by some rain as they move through, with the best bet for northern Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Chuck Shelby with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Brian Maple of FC Stone out of Indianapolis, Indiana. This is Commodity Week. Our guest is the head of the field crops section of the crops branch of the Statistics Division of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. His name is Greg Thessen. Thessen grew up in Jefferson City, Missouri, on a diversified crop and livestock farm. Began his career with NASS in his home state back in 1989. He moved to Washington in 1997. Thanks much for joining us today, Greg. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Todd.
What were the numbers as you, as a statistician, looked at this last report that actually jumped out at you? I know the 350 it was a number that most people focused on. Can you tell me how you came up with those numbers?
I think you're talking about the carryout number.
That's correct. We're soybeans.
The carryout number is actually put out by the World Ag Outlook Board, and so the numbers that we were looking at were more on the supply side for soybeans. The estimates that we put out, of course, you look across the Midwest, and most of the states were up from last month, with the largest increases in the northern part of the Midwest, up in Wisconsin, Minnesota. And some bigger changes there than we thought might come in. But as we did our survey work early in the month, as you know, compared to last month, only about 25 to 40% of the crop was out last month up in that area. Now we got about 90 to 95% of the crop out, and as we did our survey work, talking to farmers and as well as our field plots that we checked on, the yields came in a little bit better than we expected last month.
Yeah, a little bit better. It must have been quite a bit better than expected. I think when we talked with Joe Persaki last month, the expectation was that these numbers, both for corn and soybeans, were probably pretty solid. I think that something on the order of 80 or 84% of the corn objective samples had been sold and or have been pulled, and about three-quarters of the bean objective samples were pulled for the October crop production report. How good really are the beans in the areas that you did not get sampled? They must have been extraordinarily good.
Well, yeah, they were, the later beans with the weather that we had after July and, August, September weather was fairly good. Plus, had pretty good harvest weather in October to get the beans out. Now we got most of our samples in. It doesn't mean that things may not change just a little bit by the time we get to the final estimates that we publish in January, on January 12th, in our crop production annual summary. But the thing that's going to probably change, even though we have all of our objective yield data in December, we will be doing a more comprehensive survey where we contact as many as 70,000 producers. And that will be a more representative sample. As you know, the crop was quite variable in some states this year due to the dry weather. So once we talk to all those farmers and get their final yields, things still could change just a little bit.
We'll open up questions from our panel in just a moment. So the expectations then, Greg, for the December is that this number could change by how much? Do you have an idea that you're roughing this out in your mind?
Well, I just would go back and look at history. I mean, if you go back and look at the history of the estimates that we put out, over the past 10 years, you're looking at maybe 6 or 7 tenths of a percent on a 10-year average for both corn and beans. So not a lot of change that we expect, just mainly after we get, this large representative sample and get all the final yields in from the people that are in our survey. That's about the range of the change that one would expect.
And questions from our panelists?
Steve and I were talking before the show today about how ideal the harvest weather has been. Certainly, do you think that's a factor, when weather's so good and ideal that we don't get as much harvest loss, and that's helped add to the size of this crop in the last 2 years?
Yes, I would say, that does have an impact, the good weather for harvest. We actually do, in our major states where we do our objective yield survey, we do get some information where we actually send our enumerators out to do a gleanings on those fields to measure the harvest loss. And it does seem like this year, if I remember correctly, on beans especially, the loss does seem to be a little bit less than in years past.
Other questions?
On double crop acres, do you think that was partially why, with the extended year this year, I mean, our frost over our way didn't come till late days in October. Do you think that was partially responsible then also to the increase?
It could have been. We saw one thing that's kind of, when we looked at our data this time and we actually published the pod count in the November report, it seemed like as the year went on this year, those plants kept adding more pods as the year went on, and probably the double crop beans were part of that with the good weather that allowed them to put on those extra pods.
Greg, because you discussed a historical look at the change from the November report to the next one, to the December report, and even into the January, are you able to calculate the difference based on the way the 2002 Farm Bill changed the structure, meaning that you've got final crop acreage numbers in already in the October as opposed to making those revisions in January? And how does that how do you account for that when you're looking at potential change in this year and well, last year as well, but these coming years? And I guess I'm not talking about what you think the change will be, but historically, it seems that since the way you're doing it has changed, that it will throw off the historical patterns.
Well, it could to a little extent when you're talking about total production. It shouldn't change anything on, you know, looking how yields change over time, but certainly on the production it could. Like you said, we have updated the acres in October for corn and beans the last 3 years, and assuming that you know that we've got those pretty much set, you eliminate one variable there, your acreage shouldn't change much, and then all you have to worry about is changes in yield that we find based on our larger December sample. But I haven't really looked at it that closely over the last few years of the 2002 Farm Bill, but I guess I would just guess that since we are eliminating the acreage variable to a certain extent, it probably has, on total production, been a little bit closer the last couple years than, say, 10 years ago.
Greg, we thank you for time today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Greg Thessen is with USDA NASS. And now, a final word from our panelists. Steve Schilling from Strategic Farm Marketing, we'll start with you.
Well, it's been a very interesting last few days, obviously, with the bean rally. I think we've, as a panel, are probably pretty much in agreement. We continually look for a little bit of higher prices to look to get some of these beans sold, old crop and new crop. Holding off a little bit on the new crop corn, looking for maybe the 250 to 260 area in the December. I think probably we're all in agreement to get these LDPs taken on the corn, and just hope everybody has a great week next week.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
I think, again, it's time to scale up, sell, and reward this opportunity we're probably going to see here up until coming maybe the next couple weeks into Christmas. I think, again, if you took the LDP, you have to say that's pretty good money and add that back to a cash sale. And with a decent yield, that's good revenue. So be prepared. Some opportunities also, again, for 2006 coming.
And Brian Maple of Epstein Stone out of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Option volatility, relatively cheap. It allows you to step out here and take some marketing decisions and back them up with some type of an option strategy.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.